Hi, everyone. You know, there aren't many things in life worse than a closed door. I mean, we've all heard the phrase, when God closes a door, he opens a window, usually said to us by well-meaning friends who don't know what else to say when our lives have hit a roadblock. And that little phrase may have some merit, but the closed door part still really stinks. I mean, think about it. If you're a 10-year-old kid trying out for a soccer team, Daddy, can I play this year? And he finally says yes. And you get a ball and you get some shin guards and a net for the backyard. And after a week of practice with the team, it's obvious that there are too many players and some have to be cut. And the roster is read off by the coach in front of everyone one afternoon and you're not on it. And the coach says he's sorry and that they'll plan to have two teams next year. And your little heart is shattered. Closed door. I mean, maybe you've dreamt about that, the one that you're going to marry, about the thrill of falling in love, the beauty of a wedding day, the joy of being held by someone who loves you above all others. But again and again, relationships have ended in disappointment and time seems to be running out on you. A closed door. Perhaps you've come to your mid-40s and you step back and take stock of your life and what you hope to accomplish. And you decided that a few years ago to stay with the company and give it your best shot. And after years of late nights and long weekends and working vacations and time away from family, you've been passed over again for the promotion that would have changed your whole future, the one that you were working toward. And the door is closed. Maybe all your career doors are open and all the doors of your relationships are open and you've made every team that you've ever tried out for, but now the doctor has given you a diagnosis and every door in your life seems to be closing. I don't know what your situation is. Maybe you've been waiting to have kids and the doors keep closing. Maybe you've been trying to get into your top college choice and the doors keep closing. You've been waiting to get into that new house and closed doors. Closed doors are heartbreaking. Our dreams are left in ashes. Are any of you experiencing the frustration of closed doors today? Life on hold. Well, Joseph understands. And so today as we begin, Joseph is in prison. And he's there not because he did wrong, but because he did right. His life was on hold because he was falsely accused. Extremely frustrating. Here's the most important thing that you need to know about today's chapter in Genesis 40. At the beginning, Joseph is in prison, and at the end of the chapter, he's still in prison. And it's not fair, but there it is. So last week, it looked like he was positioned for greatness. He was a rising star in Potiphar's household. Joseph was climbing the ladder in a powerful administration, and then boom, he was falsely accused by an evil cougar, as John said last week. Potiphar's wife. And he winds up in prison. Boom, closed door. And the rise to power and purpose and influence that Joseph had dreamed about as a teenager, it was on hold again. And so all the doors have closed and Joseph waits because he has to. You see, when doors close, we have to wait. We don't like to wait. We don't like to go slow. We are monumentally bad at both of those things. In fact, the goal of everything these days is to go faster. But 43 times in the Old Testament, people are commanded to wait on the Lord. He will show up in his good time. In fact, one of my favorite signs is this one. It says, God is an 11:59:59 God, meaning God is never late, but he usually isn't super early either. He's always right on time. He doesn't abide by the 15 minutes early is on time principle. And so maybe you're waiting today. Maybe you're waiting to be healed or waiting for that job or waiting to have kids or waiting to find a husband or waiting to hear back from that college. And so what do we do in the waiting? Joseph gives us a picture of how to do it well. And so I'm going to frame my thoughts today around this idea, how to be faithful in the waiting. If you're not there already, from the earlier clue, we will be in Genesis 40 today. We're actually going to start with a few verses from 39, and so you can get there right now. Get ready to take some notes. I'm going to have some things for you to jot down today. But remember, here we go as we pick it up in 39:20. Joseph has been falsely accused and arrested. And Joseph's master took him and he put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and he showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Now, that last line is fantastic. If you're taking notes today, in fact, will you underline that last little sentence? Whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. And here's why it's so ironic and interesting. Because if you look at the big story of Joseph's life through earthly eyes, that's not true. It's not true that everything succeeded. Joseph's thinking, whatever I did, God made it succeed? Really? Okay, how about this one? I went out into the fields to check on my brothers. I wound up near death at the bottom of a pit and then sold into slavery. Did God make that one succeed? Or how about this? I resisted and resisted and resisted the sexual advances of a beautiful and powerful woman. And at one point she was getting so handsy with me that I had to run out of the bedroom while she stripped off my shirt and then falsely accused me of raping her to her powerful husband who had me unjustly thrown into prison. Is that what you call the Lord making it succeed? Because it doesn't feel like success to me. It's an ironic line. But I think the author here is giving us some insight into Joseph's attitude and his focus. I think it's our first key to being faithful in the waiting, and that is to focus on God's work on the small scale. Just write in the margin, will you? Focus on small successes. I mean, the big stuff looked like a disaster, but God was giving him favor in the small stuff. The prison guard liked him. He started getting more responsibility. He's being put in charge of stuff. And so when the big picture doesn't seem to be going right and you're in some kind of a holding pattern up here, you have a decision to make. You can focus on what God isn't giving you or what he is giving you. The small successes, the ways that God is being faithful in the little stuff. Joseph had every reason, you see, to focus on the big failures and to choose bitterness. I mean, so far, all the people in his life that he loved and trusted most had betrayed him. This attitude could have easily tanked his personality. The keeper of the prison approached him and gave him some extra work and gave him some responsibility. And Joseph could have said, hey, you wish I was going to do extra work for you, prison person. This is your job. Don't try to pawn it off onto me. I mean, it must be nice to have a bunch of prisoners do your dirty work. He could have chosen bitterness, you see. But instead, he engaged his enemy. He impressed his overseer. And most importantly, instead of living with a victim mentality, he chose to see God's hand of faithfulness at work in the small stuff. Instead of seeing these extra responsibilities as a burden, he saw them as an opportunity. And so the jailer comes and he gives him a job. And Joseph's first response is not everyone shoving their work on me. It's not that. It's, see there? God's giving me success, even here in prison. So my question is, what attitude will you bring to the table when you're dealing with closed doors? Will you focus on small successes instead of the big roadblocks? I read a story this week about Thomas Edison. His son Charles wrote about this event in his book entitled The Electric Thomas Edison. He said, well, one December evening, the cry of fire echoed through Edison's plant. Spontaneous combustion had broken out in the film room. Within moments, all the packing compounds, celluloid for records, film, other flammable goods, they had gone up with a whoosh in flames. And he says, when I couldn't find my father, I became concerned. Was he safe? With all of his assets going up in smoke, would his spirit be broken? He was 67, Thomas Edison. No age to start again. And his son said, then I saw him in the plant yard running toward me, screaming, where's mom? Where's mom? Go to her. Go get her and tell her to get her friends and come on out here. They will never see a fire like this again. Isn't that great? And rather than saying, oh God, why did you do this to me? Why do I deserve this? 67 years old, I've faithfully lived my life, and this is what I get in return. No, he says, hey son, go get your mother. This is an incredible sight. Look at that fire. And immediately the next morning, he declared that the company would rebuild. And he issued a somewhat famous quote. He said, you can always make capital out of disaster. We've just cleared out a bunch of old rubbish, he said. We'll build bigger and better on these ruins. And so how will you approach your closed door, the disaster, the fire, the ruins that you're walking through? With bitterness, with hand-wringing, with an attitude like Edison that says, look at the opportunity. Or more importantly, with an attitude like Joseph that says, God is still at work. God is still faithful. Yes, I got tossed into prison, but there are people here who trust me. I'm becoming a leader of the prisoners. God is at work. Where's your focus? On the ruins or on God's work in the small stuff? And so just as Joseph's getting settled into his new role, two of Pharaoh's highest officials are thrown into this very same prison. They were the cupbearer and the baker. And although that may sound like the start of a Mother Goose nursery rhyme, it is not. These were two very important men. In those days, if anyone wanted to kill the Pharaoh, poisoning of his food or drink was one of the better ways to do it. And so the cupbearer, who pre-tasted all the food and drink, and the baker, who prepared it all, needed to both be high-ranking and highly trusted. And so as chapter 40 begins, they were both thrown into jail. We don't know why. Maybe too many jalapenos in the chili. Not sure. But at any rate, they're in prison. And they both had dreams that troubled them. Now remember, Joseph had some experience in dreams. He had some dreams of his own. In fact, this is one of the main ways that God talked to Joseph through his dream. It's a spiritual gift for him. And so the prisoners wake up one morning and Joseph sees that they're upset. And he says, why are your faces so downcast today? You look at verse 8 of chapter 40. And they said to him, we've had dreams and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. Now, here's the second way to be faithful in your waiting. It's to keep serving others with your gifts. Would you underline that little phrase in chapter 40, verse 8 that says, please tell them to me, and just write in the margin, keep serving others. Notice, Joseph recognized this, whatever was happening here, as a spiritual endeavor. He said, oh, dreams? That's a God thing. I can help with that. You see, when people are suffering, they start to ask deeper and more probing questions. Christians should be saying, when their friends say, ask these questions, they say, oh, that sounds like a God question. I can help with that, right? So notice that Joseph steps in and he starts serving them. He's using his time, his talents, his energy, his motivation to help these people. He was using his God-given gift of interpreting dreams to help others, and it didn't appear to benefit him at all. You see, instead of turning inward during times of struggle, we must turn outward. It helps us to stay sane. It helps us to keep our perspective. It helps us to remember that God is close by. Do you have any God-given gifts that you've buried or turned inward because of closed doors? You see, especially when doors are closed and our world seems small and confined, it's important to keep using those gifts and serving others. Because when we use our gifts, it's a reminder that God is still with us. Because remember, the gifts are from him in the first place. And so using those gifts connects us back to God. Joseph cared for these people. He didn't wallow. He didn't isolate. He served them. Remember, he had a big dream from God in which people were bowing to him. And so helping these prisoners with their little dreams, it must have seemed like a little lesser calling to him than what he knew was in store. But God is not just the God of big things. He's the God of all things. Remember, Jesus told his disciples one time, he said, be faithful with little and you will be entrusted with much. I think that's what Joseph's doing here. He's being faithful with the gift that God had given him for the benefit of others. And in some small way, I think Joseph's willingness to interpret their dreams means that he's not yet given up on his own dreams. Deep down inside, he still believes that one day God will cause those early dreams to come true. Otherwise, he could have just said to these men, my advice to you guys is to forget about your dreams. They don't mean anything. I had dreams of my own one day, and look where I am now. No, no, no. His serving them proved that his faith was still strong. Are you experiencing closed doors today? In some area of your life, don't isolate. Keep serving others in the process. Found out that your promotion and move to a new city is on delay. You're going to be in Erie for a couple more years. Double down and use your gifts to serve the church here at Grace. Has the door been closed on your ability to have children right now? Serve in Grace Kids or find a way to bless a friend and their kids. There's something about turning your attention to serving another that keeps you from being overcome with your own frustration and grief. I was so proud of a dear friend of mine who has had an incredible struggle with both having children and then disappointment after disappointment trying to adopt. And when one of her pregnant work colleagues went into labor, she shifted into overdrive when it came to serving her friend. I mean, in big details and small, she helped with every aspect of that labor and delivery where it was appropriate. It was a massive blessing for her friend having a baby, and I'm sure it was somewhat cathartic for her as well. It was just a beautiful picture of someone saying, the door is closed for me right now, but in my struggle, I'm not going to isolate, I'm not going to wallow, I'm going to serve. And there's healing there. So just to review, we've said that if you want to be faithful in the waiting, focus on God's work and the small successes, keep serving others. Remember, here we're going to pick up the story in verse 9. The cupbearer and the baker had both had bad dreams. Here we go in 49. And so the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph, and he said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on that vine there were three branches. And as soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, here's the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days, and in 3 days Pharaoh will lift you up and lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you. And please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh. And so get me out of this house. Get me out of this prison. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews. And here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. Here's the third key. Rely on God, but seize opportunities. You know, so far we've seen Joseph with this amazing kind of stoic faith in God. He recognizes that God's at work. But that doesn't mean that he has stopped working the angles. I mean, I'm sure that he'd been very spiritual and in prison had looked to heaven many times and said, God, your will be done. Your will be done. I will surrender to your perfect will, right? And then he finds out his buddy's getting out and he grabs him by the collar and says, take me with you. I mean, he was surrendered to God's timetable, but he was also looking to seize every available opportunity. In verse 14 there, will you underline the words, mention me to Pharaoh. And just write, seize opportunities in the margin. This isn't a lack of faith. This is real life. I love this because it shows us that Joseph is not some porcelain saint. He saw an opening and he took it. He knew that sometimes a guy gets out of prison because of who he knows. And no one was closer to Pharaoh than the cupbearer. And so he grabs the cupbearer and he says, when you have the ruler's ear, please throw me a bone. You see, on the one hand, Joseph was faithful and ready to serve God where he was. On the other hand, he didn't want to stay in prison forever. He knew that God had a dream for his life. And you see, faithfully waiting on God isn't the same as inactivity. Waiting on God doesn't mean sitting around saying, well, I'm just waiting on the Lord. If he wants to do something, he can do it. Just kind of plop yourself on your couch and wait. No, listen. In the olden days, I'll give you an example. When a boy was courting a girl, you know what the old timers would call that? They would say, that young man's waiting on that young lady. It was called waiting. What did they mean by that? It's not sitting around. It means he's pursuing her. He's waiting on her. I'll guarantee you that there was some activity going on there. There were some letters being written. There were some phone calls being made. Flowers and candy being delivered, right? He's waiting on her. Listen to how Proverbs describes waiting on God in Proverbs chapter 8. God says, blessed are those who listen to me, watching daily at my doors, waiting at my doorway. You see, this is not a passive activity. Waiting is active. It's eager, but it's also reliant on God. The passage that I always love is Jesus telling his disciples to pray to the Lord of the harvest. Remember this? He say, pray to the Lord of the harvest that the Lord would send workers into the harvest fields. And I imagine all the disciples bowing their heads and maybe holding hands and saying, God, please send some workers into the fields to do your work of evangelism. And I think it was a very short prayer because Jesus' next word is, go. You are the workers. You are the workers you've been praying for. You're the answer to your own prayers. Go. Yes, pray. Absolutely rely. Depend on God and his timetable. But be active in your waiting, watching for opportunities that he might bring to you. And so I ask you, what's your closed door today? In this season of waiting, what are your options? Wringing your hands? Being filled with anxiety? Seeking revenge? Being filled with rage? Giving up on God? Those are options. Or you could be pursuing God with your whole heart, listening for God's voice in your chair every day, keeping your eyes on the swivel for how God might bring an unexpected opportunity your way. The interesting thing is that God would, in fact, use Joseph's little comment to the cupbearer to get him out, just not right away. God was still in control of the timetable, but he ultimately used Joseph's initiative during his waiting. Now, this whole time, Joseph's telling this great interpretation to the cupbearer, and the baker is listening in. And he thinks, this Joseph guy is great. He's got positive thoughts for everybody, great interpretations. He's like a regular Joel Osteen. I can't wait to hear the interpretation for my dream about the 3 cake baskets on my head, right? But the news wasn't so positive for the baker. Look at Joseph's interpretation in verse 19 of chapter 40. Joseph said, in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. Whew. And then the next couple of verses, we read that it happened to both men just as Joseph had predicted. The cupbearer was saved. The baker was hung on a tree. Now, this little passage might not seem like much, this little comment to the baker. But during the course of my study of this text, of all the insights that I found, this one might have stood out to me the most. And here's the lesson that I think is important here. That's to obey God even when it's hard. Will you underline the words there in verse 19 where it says, hang you on a tree, and just write, obey when it's hard. Now, here's why this was so profound to me. These two guys in prison were Joseph's ticket out. He knew that they were heading back before Pharaoh soon. He knew that either one of them could say a word, whisper an endorsement, provide a positive reference that would get him out of that prison. He should have been glad-handing both of these guys. He should have told them what they wanted to hear exactly. He should have blown some smoke, whatever was necessary. But you certainly don't tell one of them that he's about to get his head chopped off in a few days, that birds are going to eat the flesh off the rest of his body as he hangs there. That is not a good strategy. This is not a principle on how to win friends and influence people. But that's what Joseph did. He told the truth. He'd always lived by this adage, be faithful and obedient in all things, even the small things. He looked at the baker and he told him the truth. And this isn't a story of, you know, I walk with God, so God makes things good for me. A lot of people are sold that bill of goods when they become Christians. There are times when you know in advance, if I follow God here, if I do this or say that, it's going to get brutal for me. You see, it's easy to follow God when it's all love and blessings. It is much harder when obedience requires sacrifice and boldness and a little bit of guts. Maybe some of you are stuck today. You're locked down. It seems like closed doors are the story of your life, and it would be just easier for you to take a shortcut. You know, you're struggling financially. It'd just be easier to fudge some numbers. You're struggling emotionally. It would just be easier to numb the pain with that substance. Your marriage is breaking down. It would just be easier to walk. But guys, sometimes obedience is hard, especially during times of waiting. But Joseph shows us that we must obey even when it's hard. So here's what we've learned today about waiting faithfully for God's timetable. We've learned to focus on God's work in the small scale, to keep serving others with your gifts, to rely on God but seize opportunities, to obey God even when it's hard. And as we finish our story, Joseph had pinned his hopes on the cupbearer. Remember me, he said. You know, remember me when you're with Pharaoh. Look at the most heartbreaking verse of this whole passage in verse 23. It says, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. If we sneak over into verse 1 of the next chapter, it says, after 2 whole years, Pharaoh had a dream. 2 whole years. Here's our 5th key to faithfully waiting, and it's to remember God's at work on the grand scale. Underline those words in verse 1 of chapter 41 that say, after 2 whole years, and just write God's timetable. Joseph was forgotten again, or so it seems, because even though the cupbearer forgot Joseph, God didn't. that there was a greater plan at work. You know, in our first point today, I said that it's important for us to focus on God's work in the small scale, to concentrate on the little victories. That's still true. But we need to also to remember that there is a grand scale, that there's also a larger narrative. And while we might not always have access to it, it doesn't mean it's not there. Sometimes it's a matter of perspective. And I've told this story before, but many years ago now, CNN was doing some anniversary specials on D-Day and the Battle at Normandy. And I watched these two specials back to back. The first half-hour special was a series of interviews with some of the U.S. infantrymen that had run up onto the beaches that day at Normandy. We've all seen the brutal recreations of that scene. Those foot soldiers were describing in detail the carnage that they witnessed. It seemed at times that every U.S. soldier around them was being killed. They saw no advancement of troops, only death and destruction all around them. One of the men they interviewed said these words toward the end of the interview. He said, "I just kept thinking in my mind as I looked at the carnage, there is no way we can win. There's no way we can win." That half-hour segment ended. They followed it with another half-hour show that was dedicated to interviews with some of the U.S. pilots that were flying reconnaissance missions over the same battlefield on that very same day. They were seeing the exact same scene unfold, only from an entirely different perspective. And from their perspective in the air, they were able to see the troop advancements and the retreating enemy soldiers. They could see the whole scenario from their higher vantage point. And one of the pilots in his interview said these words as he saw the pictures coming in from reconnaissance. He kept saying to himself, "There's no way we can lose. There's no way we can lose." It's the power of perspective. The power of the big picture. Woodrow Wilson had a great quote. He said, "I would rather lose in a cause that will someday win than win in a cause that will someday lose." You see, in God's grand scale, we must remember often that we are on the winning team. But the winning is not often on our timetable. You see, God doesn't keep time the way we do. Psalm 92 says, "He is from everlasting to everlasting." 2 Peter 3:8 says, "With the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as one day." God is bigger than our clock. He's never in a hurry. He's never late. And if you're waiting on God today, I'm here to remind you that your Redeemer is on the way. He's just not working on your schedule. So let me ask you our key question again today. Are you willing to accept God's timetable? Because here's the powerful promise for those who wait from Isaiah chapter 40. It says, "They who wait for the Lord, they shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." And honestly, guys, here's the deal with waiting. Sometimes the happy ending doesn't come in this lifetime. Because God's timetable includes an eternal future. And so we hear all the time as American stories of Bill Gates and Abraham Lincoln and Oprah and Michael Jordan, and we're told that all you need is hard work and ingenuity and the sky is the limit and you'll be something big and all your effort will pay off in the end. And Joseph's experience was obedience sometimes leads to more hardship. Sometimes telling the truth gets you fired. Sometimes playing by the rules gets you fourth place while the cheaters win gold, silver, and bronze. But our ultimate hope is in God's perfect providence and in His timetable. This life isn't the end of the story for us. And God doesn't always balance the scales in the here and now, but He will reward the faithful. And for that, we hope. And here's the key. Right at the beginning of our text today, we heard these words and then we saw them lived out throughout the chapter in 40. That the Lord was with Joseph. That's where he was the whole time. That's where he is with you too. And as long as God is by your side, you're on the right side. Even if it feels like you're losing right now, you're part of the cause that will one day win. So here's my challenge for you today. Is to ask this question and meditate on it. Where do you need to submit to God's timetable? That's our question for today. You see, our tendency is to rush ahead in our own time, in our own strength. But where is it that you need to learn the lessons of faithful waiting and say, "God, I submit to your timetable"? Spend a few minutes today, this week, in your times of devotion, in your chair, reflecting on that question. And so today's message ends just where it began, with Joseph in prison, falsely accused, unjustly imprisoned, alone and forgotten. Apparently the doors are closed. The story's over. The dream is dead. or so it seems. But for 2 more years, Joseph would persevere. For 2 more years, he would wait faithfully, and it would pay off, because next week, he's about to meet the most powerful man in the world. God bless you.